All right, we are back. This is Didactic Mind, episode 17, The Riddle of Steel. First podcast in a couple of weeks, actually. I missed last week. My apologies for that, for those of my loyal listeners and readers who were expecting a podcast or an episode uploaded last week. I was just, I just had a whole bunch of stuff, personal, you know, stuff that kind of blew up, and I had to deal with that a bit, but it's all settled. I mean, nothing serious, nothing too bad, but here I am. Got a cup of tea in front of me, and got a topic on my mind that I want to talk about, and we are pretty much ready to go. So I may do a catch-up episode sometime in the week, just to get everything squared away and copacetic, to make sure that, you know, we have roughly one episode every week, but, you know, we'll see how things go. So, very warm welcome, as always, to all of my loyal listeners from SoundCloud, all of my loyal subscribers, and, of course, to all of my loyal readers from the blog. Now, those of you who have not subscribed either here on SoundCloud or on the blog, I heartily recommend that you do so. Just hit the subscribe button here on the SoundCloud page so that you never ever miss a new upload, and they are pretty regular. I mean, I've been pretty good about making sure that things happen in a reasonable time frame and that new podcasts get uploaded regularly. So, and those of you who are new, of course, very warm welcome to you. I hope you enjoy what you are listening to. Please give it a thumbs up or a like or whatever it's called here on SoundCloud if you enjoyed it. And if you did, as always, make sure that you subscribe so that you never ever miss a new upload. With the repeated admonitions to subscribe out of the way, let's get on with the topic of today's podcast. And the topic is very simple. It's a topic very near and dear to my heart. Comes down to the riddle of steel. Now, for those of you who have watched Conan the Barbarian, and I mean watched the movie, it is the 1982, I believe, John Boorman adaptation, not the subsequent remake, the one starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, not the one starring Jason Momoa from, I think, 2016 or whatever it was. The remake is appalling in almost every way. It's just a dreadful movie. But the original, directed by John Boorman, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, is one of the defining classics of red-pilled cinema. Any man who considers himself to be in any way masculine and in any way impressed by what it means to be masculine will watch that movie and think, wow, this is really good. Not because it's a great masterpiece of storytelling or dialogue or filmmaking, or, I mean, there are tremendous moments of all of these things in that film. But, you know, you could argue the pacing is a bit uneven, the fight scenes are a little ridiculous, Arnold Schwarzenegger has all the charisma of a door, effectively. All of that is true, okay? There's no denying any of these things. But for those of you who know something about the Conan the Barbarian comics, and the original stories, actually, for those of you who have read the original Robert E. Howard stories, that movie is a definitive adaptation. It's brilliant. It really captures the spirit of Conan the Barbarian. And I want to go back to the very, very beginning of the movie, where Conan's father is talking to him about the importance of steel. He basically says to young Conan, "Steel, Conan, steel you can trust. Women will let you down. Friends will abandon you. But this steel, you can always trust in this. It will never, ever get away from you. It will never leave you, abandon you in the field." And that's right before, of course, Thulsa Doom, played so brilliantly by James Earl Jones, comes in and wipes out Conan's entire village, kills his mother in front of him, his father dies at arms, and so on. Now, later on in the movie, about halfway through, Conan goes to meet Thulsa Doom himself. And Felsardum says to him, steel is brittle, steel can rust, steel can break when put under enough pressure. Flesh, the mind, is far more important. Look at this, look at what I can do with just my powers of persuasion over flesh. And he basically looks at a girl on a cliff, and he says, you know, he sends her a telepathic command and says, jump off the cliff and commit suicide. And she does so. She takes a leap to her death with a smile on her face. She looks at him, beaming with joy, and still beaming, you know, steps off the cliff, plummets to her death, and is shattered on the rocks below. And Felsardum basically says to Conan, steel has no power here. Steel cannot conquer me. Your trust in steel is misplaced. And then, towards the end of the movie, the riddle of steel is finally solved. Because the riddle of steel essentially comes down to the fact that steel is brittle, flesh becomes weak, but will is unbreakable. And it is Conan's will to survive when he's crucified on a tree that he finally understands the point of the riddle of steel. By the way, I got the director of the movie wrong. It's not John Boorman, it's John Milius. My apologies. That's my mistake. I stick my hand up. That's my fault. But basically, the idea is that the idea behind the riddle of steel is that it isn't steel or flesh that are stronger. You know, it's not a contest between each other. It's about using, harnessing both, subjugating them both to your will. And the reason I bring this up is because this is a subject I've wanted to talk about for a long time. I wrote a post about this called The Riddle of Steel some years ago, a couple of years ago now, talking about what it means to be a powerlifter. And that is really the central focus of this this podcast, is the mindset and the will and the strength required to be a powerlifter. What does it mean to subject yourself to powerlifting or strongman workouts? I don't consider bodybuilding to be a sport, by the way. I consider it to be performance art. I am well aware that there are lots of bodybuilders out there who are really strong. They make, you know, most amateur and even some professional powerlifters look weak by comparison. Some of those guys are in unbelievable shape, and I will readily admit that a lot of bodybuilders use the same core powerlifting exercises that guys like me use in order to build thick, dense, heavy, powerful muscle. But they're not really in the same league as people like me who do powerlifting, you know, week in, week out. Bodybuilders concentrate on a completely different approach to the iron sports. They concentrate mostly on almost entirely on aesthetics, actually, because that's the whole point of bodybuilding. I mean, I can tell you of championship, Mr. Olympia championship winners like Jay Cutler, four-time champion of the Mr. Olympia, who don't do deadlifts much. Phil Heath doesn't deadlift. I mean, Phil Heath is a seven-time Mr. Olympia champion. He doesn't do deadlifts, not really. He doesn't do heavy squats. He just does what he knows his body can do and what is best for his body. So while I have great respect for a lot of bodybuilders, not all of them, because, you know, I see bodybuilding as performance art. I don't see it as a sport. I'm not talking about what it takes to be a bodybuilder, because being a bodybuilder is in many ways an extreme example of subjugating one's flesh rather than one's will. Okay. Powerlifting and strongman, you know, these are very, very much related disciplines in a lot of ways, are all about harnessing steel and harnessing flesh. And in the process, you solve the riddle of steel. In the end, it's your willpower that counts. And I want to walk you through what it's like to be a powerlifter. When you start out, as I did, well, you know, 9.5, almost 10 years ago, you know, I started looking into powerlifting in around about this time, actually, February of about 2011. 2011. So nine years ago, pretty much. I looked at powerlifting because I could feel myself stagnating. I could feel that my body was getting weak and fat, and I couldn't understand why. Because I thought I was doing everything that I had been taught to do in terms of eating right and exercising right, for several years. I mean, I graduated from my master's program in July of 2007, actually May of 2007. I started working in June of 2007. And, you know, over the next 4 years, I kind of settled into a very comfortable routine. I would go to the gym in the morning, or I'd go for a run, and I would eat a high fiber, high carb breakfast of, you know, healthy whole grains, nutritious cereal with low-fat skim milk, and I'd have a banana, and I'd go for a walk, and, you know, walk down to the subway station, take the subway down to my workplace, and, you know, sit in a chair for 8 to 10 hours a day. And over time, because, you know, the work got progressively more and more ridiculous, I would spend progressively less and less time in the office. And the evenings, you know, over time, I would walk the 30-odd blocks or so from my workplace back to my apartment, because I was living in New York City at the time. So, you know, when you're living in Manhattan and you're living on, let's say, 73rd Street or 72nd Street, which is about the area where I was, and your office is sort of midtown Manhattan, 44th, 45th Street, you can easily do that. You can just go for a walk. You can walk straight up the road, and you'll be back at, you know, it'll be about 30 blocks, and you'll be back at your apartment within 45 minutes. It's about a mile and a half, basically, of walking. So I thought I was doing the right things, but my weight kept going up and up and up, and my clothes kept getting tighter and tighter, and I was like, well, something's not making sense. You know, here I am, I'm, what, 25, 26, thereabouts, something like that, and I should be, you know, in good shape. And that's because, you know, if I go to the gym, if I look at what my routine is right now, well, surely there can't be anything wrong, because I'm going to the gym in the mornings or in the evenings, and I'm doing a 30-minute rowing erg one day. You know, I row 8,200 meters in 30 minutes. That's a really impressive time. I mean, that surely has got to count for something. I'm doing curls and flies with dumbbells, and I'm up to 45 pounds on these curls. I can do dumbbell presses with 50-pound weights. Now, surely that's impressive. I can bench press, quote unquote bench press, like two plates on each side. Now, just to be clear, when I say I could bench press in air quotes, that meant that I barely had 2 inches or 3 inches maximum of range of motion when I unracked the bar and lowered it and then pushed it back up. That to me was a bench press. I shudder to think what a pathetic, weak pussy I was back then. It actually, I find it offensive to think about it, but that's who I was, you know. I would go to the gym 5 days a week, and I thought to myself, this is what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to eat 3 times a day. I'm supposed to have a snack in the afternoon of an energy bar or something like that. I'm supposed to avoid lots of protein and lots of fat. I should instead be eating heart healthy whole grains, lots of vegetables, lots of lean meat, cook with olive oil, not butter or and vegetable oil, of course, not with butter or coconut oil or any of these other things. And I avoid heavy weights, because that's the best way to get yourself injured, of course. What changed my mind completely after 4 years of mediocrity was coming across a website called stronglifts.com. And Stronglifts really changed my life. I had been looking around trying to figure out what is a better workout program, because I didn't have a workout program. I just did what I thought was right. I could do chin-ups, you know, even back then, I mean, as weak as I was, I could still do 20 chin-ups with good form, you know, given enough time to train it up, I could do 20 chin-ups, and I can still do 20 chin-ups now, 10 years later. I'm still quite strong enough to do that, but I couldn't do any other big compound exercises because my body had never been trained to do them. I had no idea what it meant to do compound exercises. The very idea made little or no sense to me. But when I came across stronglifts.com after a long time of vacillating, dithering about, trying to figure out what I really need to do to fix this problem of being weak and being fat, I realized, wait a second, this kind of makes sense. This program makes sense. Why? Because it follows a simple progressive overloading pattern. The ideas and the arguments make perfect sense because it is a step-by-step, measurable, quantifiable, verifiable program of results. That's what you want. That's what you get. You will eventually find yourself getting stronger because you're putting more and more weight on the bar, you're tracking your progress as you go along, and you become tougher, more muscular, more lean in the process. That, coupled with my discovery of sort of paleo slash primal dieting, I don't really consider it dieting at all. I just consider it eating. I mean, people look at what I eat and they're like, you're so restricted in terms of what... I'm like, no, I'm not. I can eat anything I want. I can eat across the entire range of vegetables. I can eat pretty much all of the fruits and nuts and dairy products that I want. I just, you know, don't eat too many processed carbs. That's it. What's restrictive or problematic about that? I don't see any issues with eating this way. It's very easy. So once I started on the strong lifts track and I started really tracking my progress, you know, I started with, I basically committed to making a series of radical changes in my life. I moved out of my apartment in Manhattan. And I moved to Jersey City because the rents were just getting stupidly expensive. I mean, I was paying $2,400 a month in rent towards the end of my time there for a studio apartment in Jersey City. In Manhattan. And I was able to move to Jersey City and get an apartment for $1,000 a month less, a one-bedroom basement apartment, which was a big mistake. I should never have taken that. But I eventually moved to a new apartment, and I moved to a new gym, and I made a commitment to myself that I'm going to start on this program of powerlifting. And over time, I began to see gains, you know, within a month or so. Problem is that 2 months after I moved, I lost my job. The company I was working at the time laid me off, as is somewhat typical in my career thus far. All three out of my four jobs I've lost because of layoffs. So, you know, you do tend to wonder if somebody up there is screwing with you, just to be on the safe side. But, you know, it is what it is. Three layoffs in 10 years is a pretty miserable track record, but it's mine. So, can't really help it. But I started out doing squats with an empty bar, and I felt so stupid because I was like, this is ridiculous. I mean, surely I can squat more than this. But I kept adding 5 pounds to the bar every workout, every time. And within a few months, I was squatting 225 pounds. And a few months after that, I was squatting 275 pounds. I started doing deadlifts with 225-pound weight plates on either side of the bar. One, you know, basically, the total that I was lifting at the time was 95 pounds. 95-pound deadlifts. Girls can deadlift more than that. Some of them, anyway. 95-pound deadlifts. That's it. That was my starting point. And within 6 months, I was deadlifting 405 pounds. Okay. That's the kind of progress that you can make on a straightforward training plan like this. That is what it, how you begin as a powerlifter. But over time, after the first 6 months or so, you're going to discover that your newbie gains will all go away, or you will plateau. They won't go away. They'll just plateau. You won't be putting 5 pounds on the bar every single workout because the weight will get to the point where it's just too heavy to manage anymore. And by the way, while I was, while my squat and deadlift were skyrocketing, my bench press sucked because of an injury that I had in my shoulder. It's about a 10-year-old injury now. Back then, I'd been injured for about a year and a half, 2 years. I'd been doing bench presses in a Smith machine one early morning in February 2009. I was being an idiot. I mean, I had, 245-pound plates and a 25-pound plate and I think another 10-pound plate on each side of the bar. So that's what, 180, 230, 250 pounds in plates alone on either side of a Smith machine bar. Nobody knows how much the actual bar itself and a Smith machine weighs because, of course, it's assisted with these pistons on either side. So the weight of that bar is not 45 pounds. It's actually considerably less than that, when you're pushing it up, you know, off the hooks. So, you know, you don't feel the full weight and push of that bar when you're doing quote unquote bench presses on that stupid thing. And I got pinned under the Smith machine. The weights just slammed down on my chest and I was pinned and my left shoulder shot back. And I think really wrenched some tendons loose. To this day, 10 years later, my shoulder is still not fully healed. There's something deeply damaged inside it that prevents me from having complete freedom of motion in the shoulder. I have complete range of motion, but something in there is badly damaged enough that if I hold a heavy bag of shopping in my left hand for too long, longer than a couple of minutes, in fact, my whole left shoulder starts to burn. If I try to push my hand above my head and keep it there for some time, my shoulder immediately starts to burn. If I move my shoulder in certain ways, it doesn't function properly. So I was terrified of repeating this injury, and I was terrified of getting pinned under the bench, under the bar again, on the bench. So my bench press really sucked, and I would take any excuse to skip bench day. You know, I would not do bench presses. I would prefer not to do them. With the result that my physique kind of evolved in weird ways. I mean, I was losing weight, and I was losing it fast. My legs were growing really thick and big, and my stomach, my waistline was shrinking, but my arms were getting strong, my shoulders were getting, my traps and delts were getting really strong, but my chest looked kind of squishy and pudgy. So I hadn't fully figured out the riddle of steel at that point, because my willpower wasn't strong enough to break through those mental barriers that I had put up for myself. It took a long time for me to get to the point where I was comfortable with bench pressing. And it took a number of really bad injuries for me to realize that while I was making progress, it wasn't sustainable progress. In February of 2012, so, you know, 8 years ago, almost exactly 8 years ago now, I went in for an early morning gym session because I'd skipped a gym session. I hadn't been able to go to the gym the night before. So I figured, you know what, I'll wake up early, I'll go to the gym in the morning, then I'll go to work, and I'll just sort of make up for it, because I, to this day, I hate skipping gym sessions. I mean, I'm more flexible about it now, but there was a time when I was absolutely completely rigid about gym sessions, and if I skipped one, I would really feel guilty about it. And that's persisted for a long time. I mean, that's part of what comes out of having the iron mind, the will of steel. That's where it comes from. So I basically went in about 8 years ago in the morning, and I tried deadlifting 445 pounds. This was really dumb. And it was really dumb because I'd only woken up an hour or so before that. My back wasn't fully stretched out. It wasn't warmed up. If I'd known back then what I know now about the need to decompress the spine by just hanging from a, you know, an overhead chin-up bar for a minute, and by doing some spinal flexion exercises, some twist and turn exercises, then I would never have done what I did. But as I tried to deadlift 445 pounds, I felt something let go in my back, and I immediately felt the worst pain I've ever felt in my entire life. It was blinding. I mean, I could barely stand, and I knew immediately that I'd done something really terrible with my lower back. So I tried, you know, because I didn't understand a damn thing about anything back then. I was too young and stupid. I tried to go back to the squat rack and do light squats. I couldn't even manage it. It was so painful. So I just packed up all the weights, put them all back somehow. I don't even know how I did it because I was in so much pain. I went back to my apartment, which was right down the road from the gym, got shaved and showered, you know, in agonizing pain the whole time, and went into work, and I just thought to myself, holy crap, I mean, this is unbearable, because I couldn't move the whole day. Moving even slightly while sitting on an office chair resulted in shifting what I know now happened back then, is that one of my lumbar discs had herniated. And effectively what had happened was that the disc was bulging outside of the spinal column, the bones that stack together. So it was bulging out of the vertebrae, and it was pushing against one of the long sort of bundles, one of the long ropes of nerves that runs down the spinal column, runs alongside it and through the hip bone and down to the legs, because there's this long cascade of nerve fibers that go down through the back. And if you rupture a disc or if you herniate a disc, what'll happen is that that disc will push against these nerves, and if you move, the push on those nerves will immediately set off extreme sharp pain, and it's absolutely miserable when you experience it, and you kind of have to go through it to understand what it's like. I mean, there are only a few forms of pain that are this brutal. There is childbirth. There is what's it called? There aren't many. Like, there's childbirth is one other thing, and this, you know, herniated disc, which results in such agonizing severe pain that you can't do anything. You can't train. You can't move. All you can do is lie on your back and rest. There is nothing short of limb amputation that will stop you from training and gaining mass, size, performance than a lower back injury. Nothing will stop you faster than this. I have trained through an injured upper back. I have trained through an injured middle back. I have never trained through an injured lower back. I've never been able to. With a couple of exceptions, and that was only because the lower back injuries that I experienced were not nerve injuries or disc injuries, they were muscle injuries. You can get over that stuff, but you can't get past a nerve-damaged spine. You can't do it. So I was laid up for a week. I stayed out of the gym for a week, and then I went back in, and I tried to do some light squats, and I could already feel my back wasn't really up to it. I got up to 135 pounds on squats, and my back let go again. I was like, oh, come on. I couldn't believe it. You know, all of my gains were gone. They were gone. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't go to the gym. I couldn't work out. So I basically had to give up going to the gym for a full month after that. And this was at a time of extreme stress and turmoil in my life because of everything that was happening at work. My parents had come over to visit and I could barely spend any time with them, because everything was just going so haywire at my workplace. I had no ability to keep track of anything because everything was just landing on my plate and I had no time to myself at all. So for pretty much the entire month of March, and most of April, I couldn't train. I couldn't go to the gym. I couldn't do anything. I had no ability to train at all. I was out of the gym for like 6 weeks. Finally, after about middle of April, I was able to resume training once again. And I was able to, try to rebuild what gains I had lost. And I had lost a lot. So I resolved to myself, okay, you know what? You need to take a step back and you need to assess what went wrong. And you need to rebuild comprehensively while concentrating exclusively on form. You need to be really careful about how you train now because you can't afford another lower back injury like that. And that's exactly what I did. I took off all the weight that I had put on the bar, you know, for squats because I realized I had been squatting a bit too high. So I took it all off and I started again with just two 25-pound plates, one on each side. So, you know, 95-pound squats. Build it up, build it up, build it up, real slow. 5 pounds every single training session, just add it up carefully. Make sure that I'm squatting down to at least parallel, and then pop back up again. Deadlifts, really slowly and carefully. Make sure that my lower back is tight and stable. Make sure that my spine is neutral or, you know, in full proper alignment. Make sure that I'm lifting with really good form. Really be careful about it. The thing is, I could have given up at that point because the steel had broken me. My flesh was broken. My flesh was not able to keep up with the demands of the steel. But over the next year and a half, my flesh grew stronger. My bones and my body grew tougher. And it wouldn't be until August 2013 or thereabouts that I was able to deadlift 445 pounds properly with really good form. And it would, you know, while I injured my back slightly, in late August of that year, I wasn't really worried about it because I knew what I had done. It wasn't such a bad injury. It didn't feel quite so bad. I just took a week off out of the gym. I went back in, I lowered the weights down a bit, you know, started working out again. And I went the next several years injury free. That is when I realized that the flesh can conquer the steel. Flesh is stronger than steel. Because you can tell your flesh to toughen up. You can make it beat the steel. You can put demands on it that force it to overcome the steel. Iron sharpens iron. And when you become a powerlifter, when you commit to powerlifting, you commit to a way of life that is utterly alien to most people. But it's necessary to make that commitment if you want to see real gains. So over the next, 5 years or so, I basically kept going, kept lifting, kept getting stronger. I added martial arts to my repertoire. And I got to the point where eventually, sort of middle of 2014 or so, mid-2014 to 2015 is probably my period of greatest strength. I was able to squat 365 pounds for a one rep max. That's without knee sleeves, just a belt. I was able to deadlift 455 pounds. I got up to 465 a couple of times. I was able to eventually bench press 235 pounds for one rep max. I think I got up to 240 once, in fact. And I was able to maintain those gains all the way through, you know, with dips and troughs and, you know, changes through time, up until about mid-2017. So mid-2017, I think, was my period of absolute peak strength, when I could really, I mean, lift crazy amounts of weight. You know, I was able to squat, again, 365 during the summer. I was able to deadlift 455. I never quite went up to 475. I hit 475 once in London in about November or December, actually, of 2014. I had 475 pounds once. But I don't really count that, because I did it with an arched back. And, I mean, not a curved back, not an arched back, a curved back, so it is like a scared cat back deadlift. I know my form broke down on that lift. It was not a good form deadlift, so I don't count that. So in my view, my best ever deadlift number is probably about 465. So that was at a body weight of about 83, 84 kilos. So, which is what, 180 something pounds, something like that. So that gives you some idea of how strong I had become. And I'm not that far away from those strength numbers these days. Well, at least not on my deadlifts, on my squats. I mean, forget it. My squats are a whole different story now. But I was pretty strong, and I have been able to maintain a lot of that strength through time. But I still hadn't solved the riddle of steel. Because within a year of accomplishing all of these things, my life was blown into pieces. Not in the gym, outside of it. Everything outside of the gym just went completely haywire. My whole life disintegrated. I lost my job, which I've talked about in previous podcasts. And because of the changes in U.S. immigration law, I couldn't stay in the U.S. anymore. I didn't have the right. So in mid-2018, I had to leave. I had to abandon the USA, leave the country completely, and go somewhere else. I had to go back to the old country, live with my parents, and I've spent the past more or less 2 years almost trying to kind of run away from that, because I just, it's so unpleasant in a lot of ways. Not because my parents are unpleasant people, but because I hate being dependent upon other people, myself. So I've spent a long time trying to get away from that, and the results have been devastating upon my ability to maintain any kind of strength. I have suffered repeated back injuries. I mean, I had four in 2019 alone. Four. One in January, another one in February, another one in June, or actually August, and another one towards the end of the year. You know, I just kept injuring my back over and over again. And it wasn't necessarily because I was lifting badly or anything like that. It was just, you know, my back was weakened so badly from years and years of abuse in the gym. Not because I was treating it badly, but because I wasn't subjecting it to the stretches and the careful, proper treatment that it needed in order to stay strong and healthy. I just didn't know what I needed to do. And now that I've done some research into it, watched videos by Athlean X, Jeff Cavalier from Athlean X, about how to keep your back healthy and supple, I have a lot more knowledge now. Now that I understand how to take care of my own back and not blow it out every time I go lift, and now that I understand what it means to have the iron mindset, where you don't go to the gym every time just to max out your strength, but you go to build sustainable strength over time. Now I understand what it means. The riddle of steel is not just about proving how strong you are. It's not about the flesh conquering the steel. It's not about letting the steel conquer the flesh. It's not. The riddle of steel comes down to your willpower and your willingness to build up yourself over the very long term. Here's the thing about powerlifters that most other people don't understand and can't understand. They look at us when we go into the gym and they see lunatics who subject themselves to just insane amounts of stress and pain. I mean, it does not, as George Lehman, you know, the baby slayer, he's a pretty famous powerlifter, and now bodybuilder and strength coach now, said in an epic rant a few years ago, which I can link to later on, in the description box. It does not take a happy person to lift these kinds of weights. As he said, if you're going to be happy peeling potatoes rather than deadlifting 800 pounds, you're going to peel potatoes, not deadlift 800 pounds. If everything is going great in your life and everything is wonderful and you're happy, you're not going to subject yourself to these workouts, which these workouts will destroy your knees and back and shoulders. They can cripple you on a day. They can cripple you for life. These workouts can cripple you. That's what he said, and he's right. These workouts can destroy you if you're not careful. What does it say about people like me, people like many of the people listening to this podcast, who go into the gym and subject themselves to this abuse? It means that we're not necessarily particularly healthy individuals, mentally speaking, because we haven't quite figured out the balance between the steel and the flesh. We start out as powerlifters trying to conquer the steel. We start out trying to, you know, using the steel to make ourselves stronger, and we try our absolute utmost to lift as much as we can. And that's not a bad thing necessarily. You spend your time and your effort and your energy trying to build a great physique, or trying to build your strength to the maximum extent possible. That's not a bad objective. It's not at all. But too many of us get caught up in this belief that we need to go into the gym and max out our lifts every single session. That's ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous and dangerous. And it's a mindset that too many of us have, and we need to get rid of it. Here's the reality of powerlifting. These workouts are incredibly exhausting for your CNS, your central nervous system. If you train like an athlete, you're not going to go into the gym and try to peak every single workout. It's not going to happen. What you're going to do instead is follow a training plan. Over the course of 12 weeks, you're going to start slow and you're going to build up intensity and endurance and difficulty over the course of those 12 weeks until you get to the point where, you know, on game day or on fight night or on match performance night, you're going to be at your absolute peak performance. Guys like Roger Federer do not train 100% all year round. It's impossible. Somebody like Roger Federer, who's not a strength athlete, he's a tennis player, is not going to train at that level of intensity all the time. Especially not given that he's been doing this stuff for 20 years, more than 20 years. Dude's almost 40 years old, and he's still ranked top 10 in the world, despite the fact that he just went in for more knee surgery. You know, he's at the tail end of his career, and he's the greatest tennis player who ever lived. I mean, that guy does not train 100% all the time. It's not possible, especially not at his age. Even the younger players don't train 100% at 100% all the time. They train in ramping progression, ramping progressive approaches to their peak performance. Okay, that's the mindset that powerlifters have to embrace, because otherwise, either you let the steel either you try too hard to conquer the steel and you burn yourself out in the process, or you let the steel conquer you and get injured. The key to solving the riddle is balance. You have to train with a mind towards building a great physique, a great training program, and a great lifestyle that you can maintain for the rest of your life. You don't need to be in the gym deadlifting 400 plus pounds every day. It's not possible. I deadlift twice a week nowadays, optimally speaking. And I have 2 days, two completely different training sessions on those two deadlift days. I always do squats and deadlifts on the same day, because I find that if I do squats first, my deadlifts are always much better, because I use low bar squats and the deadlift works out the same muscles as the low bar squat, as the primary kind of movers, as the protagonist and antagonist muscles are more or less the same, except that the deadlift, of course, is just a pulling movement. A squat is both a pulling and pushing movement, effectively. Concentric and eccentric, basically, if you want to use the specific terminology. When I do deadlifts, which are my favorite exercise, by far, I concentrate on volume on one day and maximum, maxing out on another day. On my volume days, my squats will be 5 sets of 5, ramping up over time, as preferably every set, I will try to add a little bit of weight. I was in the gym, on Tuesday night, and I started out with 225 for my first work set. Set of five at 225, then a set of five at 235, then a set of five at 245, then a set of five at 255, I just kept ramping it up little by little. And, actually, if looking back at Tuesday, it wasn't 10 pound increments, it was 5 pounds. So the numbers were, 225, 230, 235, 240, 245. And then, just a relatively light set, of 250, maybe. I think it was a set of 3 reps max. So I didn't kill myself at the gym that day. And then, I went to do my deadlifts. I mean, 255 pounds, that for me would have been child's play a few years ago. Nowadays, it's hard because I really feel the stress and pain in my lower back, because there's something going on there, which, I obviously need to get treated, and that's fine. I've just figured out how to manage it to the point where it doesn't bother me so much anymore. But I'm very careful in the gym now with my lower back to make sure that I'm not, blowing it out every time I do a set of squats, because that would be crazy. I go to do my deadlifts. Set of 225, overhand grip, no belt, just straight, quick, 225 for a set of 5. 275, set of 5. 315, set of 5, still with overhand grip, no belt. 365, mixed grip with a belt for a set of 3. 405, mixed grip, belt, no chalk for a set of 2. It's really hard work. And now I get to my final set, 415, mixed grip, mixed grip and a belt, no chalk, still. And I pull that, and that's it. I'm done. That's my volume day. Then I get to my max reps day. And here I'm really taking it much more carefully, much more easy. I'm not focusing on doing as many sets as possible. I'm just doing whatever number of sets I feel comfortable, wherever I feel safe, to get to the most weight that I can get to without killing myself. Okay. The last time I did one of these days, I think I got up to 285 pounds for a single rep. And, this was a while back. A couple of weeks ago, I must have gotten up to 255 for a one rep max. Sorry, not 255, 275 for a one rep max. That's it. 275, one rep, done. Again, this is from somebody who used to be able to squat 315 without a belt. Okay, down the depth, back up again for one rep without a belt. And I'm squatting 275 for one rep with a belt nowadays. Get to deadlifts, and I'll get, I'll rack up a 435 pound deadlift, and I'll call it a day. That's it. Done. You know, I'm not interested in posting crazy numbers anymore, at least not for somebody of my size, strength, genetics, whatever, because I understand the need of the riddle of steel, the meaning of the riddle of steel. The riddle of steel is all about willpower. It all comes down to willpower. Do you have the will to get into the gym, to work out, to lift these weights, which are helpful to you in the end and to nobody else? Even when your body's telling you you can't do it, even when the steel in front of you looks too intimidating, do you have that ability to go in and make yourself do these workouts? If you do, then you have the iron mind. And that's what distinguishes real powerlifters from the pretenders, from the gym bros, from the idiots who go in there and just do bullshit every single week. The arm and chest bros who clutter around the stupid bench press and do these bro hugs and back slaps whenever somebody struggles to get through a 135 assisted rep. I mean, it's such a joke. I can't stand watching those idiots at the gym. Are you the kind of guy who goes in there time and time and time again, puts in the work, puts in the effort, tries hard, fixes his form, makes sure that he's eating right, makes sure that he's sleeping right, makes sure that he's getting the right supplements, makes sure that he understands where he's going wrong with his lifts, tries to film himself doing his squats, tries to film himself doing deadlifts, analyzes his form? Are you that guy? Then you understand the riddle of steel. You understand that it's about applying your will against the steel and against your flesh to become the best that you can be. When you walk up to, when you see powerlifters like me in the gym about to, you know, do our last set, and I mean, we're practically embalmed in chalk and we've got our belts, you know, cinched up tight on our waists, and we've got this look in our eyes like we'll fucking murder you if you get in our way. We'll kill anybody who crosses our path. We look like enraged gorillas in the gym, and we're set up with this bar that looks impossibly heavy. You know, we walk up to the squat rack and like we're enraged. You can see the veins popping out on the sides of our necks. You can see this look of pure fury in our eyes. And we walk up to that bar and we unrack it on our backs, squat down, pop back up, struggle mightily all the way. We let out this huge roar of triumph when we get to the top, grab the bar and when we're doing the deadlifts and yank it up and just let loose this bellow of rage. That is what I'm talking about when I say the triumph of will. That's what it is. That is your willpower making you achieve the impossible. Most people can't do this stuff because they don't have the will, they don't have the belief, they don't have the training, they don't have the discipline, they don't have the guts to do this stuff. That's what it's like for people like me. That's what it's like for people like my readers who go into the gym every single day of the week, or, you know, as many times as they care to go, as many times as is healthy for them. They go in, they put in the work. They have the work ethic. They have the desire. They have the means and the will to do what has to be done. That's what it means to have the iron mind. And it's a very scary thing to watch. This is not, people who do this stuff aren't really happy people, as George Lehman said. We're not a happy bunch of people. There is something fundamentally broken in every powerlifter within his psyche that is pushing him to do these things that most sane people wouldn't want to do. But then most sane people, or most normal people, I would say, are happy being average. Powerlifters aren't happy being average. Powerlifters want to be the best they can be. That's the difference. That's what having the iron mind gives you, is a desire to be more than average. It's a desire to be the best that you can be. And that's a very good thing. Having that desire will push you in all areas of your life. Because once you solve the riddle of steel in the gym, you'll solve it everywhere else that you need to. You'll find yourself able to put up with pressures that would break most men. You'll be able to deal with stresses at work, stresses in your personal life, stresses in your love life, stresses in your family life that would break most men. Why? Because you have that calmness, that discipline, that work ethic that comes with getting into the gym every single day and working your ass off. That's what it takes. That's what you have to inculcate. That's what you have to cultivate. That's what you have to build. And you only get there by going up to a bar made out of chrome steel with weight plates on either side of it and putting in the work. You only get there by going onto a sparring mat in a dojo, a real dojo, getting your ass beat every single time you go and learning from your mistakes. You only get there by putting in the work. That is the key to solving the riddle of steel. You put in the work, you learn from your mistakes, and you try to build up yourself in a way that is sustainable and sensible. Don't make the mistake that so many gym bros make, that too many powerlifters make, of just trying to max out all the time. It's not about putting up the biggest numbers you can. It never was, and it never will be. Make it instead about putting up the best results that you can that are sustainable over a long period. Create for yourself a training program where you spend, let's say, 12 weeks building yourself up to a particular point, you know, building up your physique and your results to a particular point. So, you know, you add weight or you add reps over time. Set yourself specific goals and meet those goals. And once you're done meeting those goals, after 12 weeks, you begin to ramp down again. You begin to wind down. You go into sort of off season. So for 8 weeks, you really wind down and you make, you know, you reduce the weight on the bar and you just concentrate on reps. You concentrate on good form. You just take it a lot easier. You let your body heal and recover and rest. Don't do what I did, which is, you know, in 2014, basically for 5 months in 2014, I basically worked out nonstop from January to May of 2014, I pretty much did not take a break for 5 months from lifting, from martial arts, from pretty much anything. My body hurt so badly after that. You know, it's impossible even to describe the level of pain that involved. If you've never experienced it before, if you've never experienced that kind of mind-numbing pain and fatigue, you'll never know what it's like. I can't describe it for you. That's overtraining defined. You can't do that to yourself as a strength athlete or as even just as an amateur, you know, just as somebody who goes to the gym. You can't do it. It will burn you out. So that's about all I have to say on the subject of the iron mind, the riddle of steel, and on what it means to go into a gym and train your ass off. We are coming up on the 1 hour mark, so I should probably wrap it up here. And I just want to say once again, thank you for listening in. If you enjoyed what you heard, leave a like and leave a comment, either here or on the blog. If you have not subscribed already, please subscribe to SoundCloud itself so that you never miss a new upload. And I will see you on the next one. This is Didactic Mind, episode 17. The Riddle of Steel.